my path to cycling is very random. I actually found my coach on the web. We have in Russia a special schools, which are called Olympic Reserve Schools. Everything is funded. The main problem with accessibility is that there's limited number of velodromes. In track cycling, you have a fixed bike, which means that there are no brakes. There's one chain ring, so you can't chain.
One, hold on. What do you mean by there are no brakes? That sounds scary.
Yeah, it's literally like that.
Hey everyone, welcome back to an all new episode of All About Sports, the podcast, a weekly sports podcast for the fans, by the fans. Joining me today is Shubham.
Hi guys.
And I am your other host, Mazhar. And today we have a very special guest. It's Anya Sharaeva. But for the case of everybody else, it's going to be Anna. She's from Russia. She was a cyclist who has performed at a pretty high level, and I've seen it firsthand. To really understand what a cyclist is like, you need to see Anna. I thought I was good at cycling. Then I saw her. I saw her performing at the Velodrome. She was the only girl out of five, in the top five. The rest were all guys. So clearly tells you her levels of performance, the elite level at which she's performed. But apart from that, Anna is also a Loughborough University student, has done her master's in sport business and leadership, just like me. And one thing about her is she's also doing her dissertation with the UCI, which is the Union for International Cycling. We're going to talk to her about that as well. But before that, Anna, firstly, thank you for joining us. It's an absolute pleasure to have you. Just to start the conversation, how did you get into cycling and at what level did you compete as well?
Yeah, hi everybody. It's a pleasure to be here. Thank you, Maz. Thank you, Shubham, for inviting me here. Well, to start off, I think that my path to cycling is very random. Basically, like we were speaking about like Olympic heritage and all this kind of stuff. And for me, the Olympics 2014, was it in Sochi? Was that turning point when I actually discovered this will for sports in me. And I got interested in cycling. I just remember myself sitting, like it was January, I think, in 2014, and thinking, what can I do? Because that was a very tough period of my life, like the kids' struggles of what to do next and all this kind of stuff. And I just basically Googled what is cycling. What's there in Moscow, because I'm based in Moscow. So there's nothing like specific about cycling about the city, because it's a big city, not many places to cycle in, except the Olympic heritage from 1980 that we have. So it was very random, I would say. And I just like actually found my coach on the web, texted him, and that's how I got into track cycling specifically. I didn't know anything about track cycling before that. So it was very random. And like which level I compete in, it was a gradual development. So basically I started with school level. We have in Russia special schools, which are called Olympic Reserve Schools. So it's basically, apart from your main school, you go to Inverse Sports, and they're quite officially ranked. So I competed on first on the school level, then city level or regional level, and then international level. Yeah, that's where I stopped, basically.
Now, coming to that, of course, Russia is known for cycling. So what was your training regimen and how big is cycling as a sport in Russia truly? Because obviously we see it from only through performance and the medals that Russia wins. But otherwise, we don't know it. So if you can just share your insight into that. So firstly, your training regimen, and then how big it is as a sport in Russia.
So basically, it's very harsh, I think, in Russia, because we take sports seriously. it's not that we have some kind of university sports system. If you want to get into Olympic level sports, you need to be part of the Olympic schools. So the training regimen, it differs, I would say. We have like two types of schools. It's either a school where you go just for training after your normal one, or a special like school where you live and train. Then the kids that live there, they usually have two trainings in a day, which is normal, maybe three trainings a day, which is also good, even like on national level. So it's even on kids level. So that's what you get. But in terms of my training regime, it was 4 to 5 days a week, usually once a day for 2 or 3 hours a day. And then sometimes on weekends, I had two trainings a day in the morning, and they would stay in the track, in the cycling track, and then we trained in the evening. So I think like cycling sport in Russia is still very niche. It's not that developed. I think we're more famous in track cycling because we had several Olympic medals in the past, and we're like track cycling on the junior level and under 21 level, it's quite developed in Russia. So we get a lot of medals in world championships and Olympics, but I think a lot of people still don't know about track cycling at all. So if you ask them what it is, they will just have no clue and no idea. In terms of road cycling, which is more developed, I think, in the world, we're still lacking like competition, I think, inside the country. I would say that because the country is very big, it's very difficult to hold competitions in all regions. So I think the number of participants is quite low, actually. So it's developing, but it takes time. I think it was much more popular in Soviet times than it is now, because everything was ruined in the 1990s. Yeah.
You know, I think it's very interesting how you touched upon special schools and public schools. I remember a couple of years back, I read an article about how China was developing young athletes by scouting them at a young age and putting them in these special schools. So can you talk to us a little bit about the special school system in Russia? How do they scout these athletes? Like, how are athletes selected for these schools? Or do they get scouted at a school level or inter-school tournaments? And then once you get into the special schools, how do you grow up the ladder to then represent Russia at an international level, like the Olympics?
So basically, I think it's a bit different in different sports. I cannot like 100% say about different sports, but in cycling, usually I think coaches, they go to usual schools, like general schools that we all go to, and they talk about their sport and they try to persuade people to join the sport. But I think sport is quite popular in Russia in general, so they have no problems with attracting people in the sport. So it's easy to get into the school on the low level when you're very young. It's very difficult to get into school when you're older. So it's almost impossible. That's the main problem, I think, with Russia, because we don't have a developed university sport level. So I think that's the main difference between like Russian sports system and, for example, European ones. They try to get kids involved as early as possible. So that's the main difference. And when you get involved, everything is funded in the first hand. So you actually don't need to pay anything. And that's a good thing, of course. But you need to maintain a certain level of competitiveness. So you need to have good results and need to progress quite a lot. And we have this special, I think it's quite special though. We have the unified sport classification system, which was developed in the USSR and is now maintained in Russia. So basically, we have several levels of sporting performance, which is called like third, second, first class of junior sportsmen. Then we have third, second, and third class of sportsmen. Then we have the candidate and the master of sports level, and like merited, honored of master of sports. And those are levels are very important to us, because basically people get paid based on those levels. For example, in cycling, to be a master of sport, you either have to be the first one in the national competitions, for example, or you should, if there's a time limit, like if you have a 200 meters flying start, to say so, as a competition, you have to hit a certain time to beat a certain time, then you will get this kind of medal of, or honor. So it's very important. So I got to a candidate of master of sport level. And for that, I got paid like every month a minimum salary. So that's very important. But I think, yeah, mainly it's the Russian like system is based on the early recruitment of people. So kids get involved from very early age, from 7 years old, 10 years old. And it's very difficult to get into sport when you're older. Yeah.
I think that's such an interesting setup that they have. And when you said that all these schools are funded, so they're completely state funded, you mean, right? Like funded by the government.
Yeah, 100%. For example, in cycling, I got the bike, I got uniform if I wanted to. Well, if you're not performing well, then you might need to buy uniform for yourself. But that's not a big deal. I mean, like, but you have all the bikes. You don't pay for anything. All the equipment, all the bikes, anything that you like in any other sports. Yeah, you don't pay for your classes.
So obviously, like, while Russia has this amazing setup in terms of the grassroots level, off late with the things that's happening in the world, we know that there are sanctions on Russia. So because there are sanctions on Russia, Russian athletes are not able to compete in different sports in different competitions. So would you have any idea as to like what's happening back home? Like for the athletes who are not able to compete, what are they doing right now? And what is Russia as a country trying to do to help its athletes get back on the international level to compete?
So I think that's a very emotional question, I would say. Because like, I don't agree with those bans that have been applied on Russian athletes. I think what's being done is now athletes are trying to figure out what they need to do next. It's not only Russian athletes. We do need to remember about Belarusian athletes who are stuck in their own country too. I think what we're doing, like, it's funny. Russian athletes go to competitions into Belarus. Belarusian athletes go to competitions into Russian ones. So it's mainly all national competitions, and that's it. And I think Russian government is trying to hold more national competitions to like kind of maintain the level of interest in the sport. And in terms of cycling, it's very interesting. For example, in track cycling, there are no international teams. Well, that's the specifics of the sport. So athletes are trapped inside the country more or less. But those athletes who were able to be a part of international team are now able to compete. So there is no ban on like Russian athletes competing under international teams, international road cycling teams. But there was one case with, we have a main team, Russian road cycling team, which is called Gazprom Rosvelo. So because their major sponsor is Gazprom, they had to terminate the contract and the whole team is now left without funding. So I think the members of the teams appealed to the UCI for those rules. Though they're struggling a lot because they lost their salaries, they lost everything. Gazprom was, I think, the only sponsor of the team, major sponsor. So that's pretty tough. But I think the Russian government is now considering options to moving east and trying to be involved in like Eastern competitions with China, with India, with Middle East, trying to focus on this market rather than European that we were focused on before.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think all sports lovers and sports fans would just hope that all the geopolitics stays outside of sports and athletes should not suffer and they should get a chance to demonstrate the talent. But yeah, it's nice to know that the Russian government is still trying to maintain the standards of the athletes by hosting more national tournaments. So in terms of your career as a cyclist, we've always believed that for kids, participating in sports is great for the development. So for you, being a cyclist for all these years and participating in so many competitions, what would you say were your biggest learnings that you took as a cyclist and have shaped you as a person that you are today?
I think the main one was the actual competition itself. I think when you're, well, to start with, cycling has changed my personality a lot. I think the sport, like elite level sport, when you are in cycling or in any other sport and you get involved right directly into national competition, it changes you a lot, because putting all this effort in the competitions when you have to fully rely on your physical condition or your muscles, and it is the heaviest work in life, I think. The main thing I learned, that all the other problems like exams, I don't know, work, school, unis, are just not even close to the amount of pressure and the need and trust in yourself to get in your competitions, to be on the podium. That's very important. And I try to remember that. And like, it's very important not to forget that, that competing with your own like body, with your own muscles, is way more difficult than all this kind of problems we have in usual life with like anything. When you have to, like, when is the day of competitions and you know that you need to show the result, and you know the pressure, you know your peers are looking at you, that's the most difficult thing. And then after you do this, you kind of learn that, yeah, that's difficult. But like other problems, when you don't have your rely on your muscles and your physical condition in this right particular moment, everything is easy afterwards. And I think that's the biggest takeaway that I've had. And another one is the way of living, is the way how like sportsmen treat their bodies, how they live, how they love themselves, how they need to protect themselves. And that's important, I think. And I think it's just the climate in the sports industry that I've learned. What are the main issues there and how difficult it is for sportsmen to maintain the level of performance they have during their youth period and to maintain this when they get older.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think like Mazhar has played sports, I've played sports. I think one thing that all of us believe is sports really teaches you mental toughness. And yeah, that sort of mental toughness, it generally lasts with us like throughout a career. And I agree with you, like when it comes to playing a sport and competing, the amount of pressure that you feel is nothing compared to like exams. So exactly. Yeah. I think that mental toughness is a critical aspect of development. But yeah.
Yeah, I so that was a bit about you, Anna. Like we went through that, and just to understand how cycling is in a country that is so close to us, but we know nothing about. Now we'll move on to something more general, something that actually I mentioned at the start when introducing you. You're doing your dissertation with UCI. We all know that you really wanted this one, of course, because you're so passionate about cycling. For all our viewers, UCI is the Union for International Cycling. It's a French word. I'm not going to say it. But Anna, if you can just share a few things. Of course, I know you have certain restrictions on what you can share as well. So whatever you can share, I think it'll just be good learning for all our viewers.
Yeah, sure. I mean, it's an exciting opportunity to get involved in the project that the UCI has. I think what I can share is that the UCI is now trying to focus on not only the competitive cycling, but also everyday cycling. So they're trying to promote their efforts in promoting cycling as a way of sustainable transport. So that's why they're now seeking some backup for their actions. And basically, their main issue is that they need to have kind of basic line and ground line for their further actions. Their goals are quite ambitious, I would say. They really want to understand how many cyclists there are in the world, which is quite ambitious. Yeah. I mean, like everyday cyclists, we're not speaking about sportsmen, we're speaking about like leisure cycling, commuter cycling, utility cycling, all this kind of stuff. And my dissertation will be based on estimating cycling participation rates globally and how they can be measured. So it's very important for the UCI to provide some guidelines and inform their advocacy office on how they can help cities, national federations, international organizations in promoting cycling. And a way of doing that can be like advising you how to measure cycling participation. And that's exactly where I'm looking in. So I'm looking at the best practices in the industry, how different cities, for example, I know that Paris has implemented really advanced measures on measuring like the number of cyclists on the streets every day. So they're trying to collate all this measurement techniques, to say so, and then provide some guidelines for the cities or regions that are not very developed to help them measure and promote cycling in everyday life.
I mean, it sounds pretty interesting, but at the same time, supremely daunting. I'm very happy with my dissertation. I'll just put it out there. I still need ethics clearance, but we'll get there. But now coming to the next question, who is your favorite cyclist of all time? Just one name, Anna. I just need one name.
It's so difficult to like imagine one name because they're like cycling is very different, you know. If there's road cycling, can I name just, I would say, three names? I think I'll start with track cycling because it's like it's my loved sport and it's very different to road cycling. I think I'm really proud of Christina Vogel. She's a German cyclist. She's been very successful on Olympics 2012, 2016, and World Championships. But then I think it was 2018 when she had a terrible accident on the track. She crashed into another track cyclist. She had several fractures in her spinal cord. So now she's paralyzed. And I'm really impressed in the strength of this woman. I've met her several times in person. She's like really great. I mean, she was a great cyclist and now she's a great ambassador for track cycling, for supporting Paralympics, for supporting Paralympians in Germany, all over the world. I'm really proud of her. I'm really proud of how she managed to transition from Olympic, like she was in the top form when the accident happened. And like, she was really good in trying to be the best that she can and not like giving up to be a best role model for everybody. I think I'm really inspired of her. So, and like speaking about road cycling, I think Peter Sagan, he's just handsome guy. I really love him. And he had some like numerous major wins in the past. He will compete in the Tour de France soon. So yeah, I really like him.
Coming to the Christina Vogel story, I used to follow her as well. I watched her in the Olympics. I remember watching her in, like you said, 2012 and then 2016 in Rio as well. She won the bronze medal in the team and she won the gold individual. And when I heard that news, it's always the worst thing. And I mean, extreme case for her was becoming paralyzed, and absolute joy to watch her. One of the few names I knew. So I was very happy when you picked out Christina Vogel because I knew who she was. So coming to the next question that I had, Anna, was everyone knows this one. Lance Armstrong's case broke out. Of course, what was your reaction to that? And do you think that scandal sort of made you, not made you, but rather made testing in cycling even more stringent than it already was? Do you think that was the case?
So I think like at that time when the scandal came out, doping in road cycling was very common, but nobody spoke about that. And the thing is that I think my reaction was not, I didn't react much because when the case emerged, I was just like getting into the sport. So I think I didn't know much about that at that time. But like to my knowledge, I think that this case had several impacts in the industry. For example, major sponsors, they terminated the contracts with the road cycling teams because they didn't want to be involved, not like in the industry itself. So that was the big consequence. And I think the UCI as an international federation. And I think afterwards, not much has changed in terms of testing, but I think certain procedures, certain like levels of testing have enhanced in certain amount, but there are still a lot of issues in road cycling because big teams have a lot of resources, have a lot of money, and they are able to enhance the performance of their athletes quite a lot. And I think that was very controversial, this case. It was very popular among the public, but it didn't have an impact on the industry and the industry as it should have had. So I think it's 50-50, I would say. I think there could have been more results after this case.
Yeah, I mean, also, again, that was road cycling. And that's very different from track cycling, which we'll come to in a bit.
Yeah, I just think the Lance Armstrong case obviously took the world by shock. But yeah, moving back to track cycling. So in general, like an athlete who's a track cyclist, what's their career span that looks like? Like how many years would you say they could be in their prime? And once they're done being a track cyclist, what are the other sort of avenues or opportunities that they have within the sport? Like perhaps become a coach or what is the general career direction that retired athletes take?
Yeah, I think the general career starts at junior level. If you didn't start at junior level, then it's very tough. It depends on the country, but I think that's the general rule. So I think that in track cycling, we start at age of 16, 17, I would say. Then you have a lot around, I think when the cyclists retire, it's around 35, the maximum. There are certain cases when you're able to compete until you're 40, but usually you like around 30, 35, that's your limit. So I would say, yeah, how many years? Like around, yeah, maximum 20 years in cycling, which is quite good. Yeah, you can maintain the level of performance, but that depends on how much you train and what is your training routine. It should be really smart. And I think like Europeans are very good in it. And like, I would say in Russia, they're not very good at it because a lot of sportsmen, they finish their career at the age of 27 because they're done. Like there was so much effort when they were young. They were taking all the medals in junior competitions, like under 21 competitions, that when they hit the age of 25, 27, they're done. So that's very difficult to maintain. And I think in terms of like further paths, the most common one is a coach. Being a professional coach, I know some sportsmen that have become a nail masters on all this kind of stuff, which is very dreadful. But I mean, yeah, the main paths are coaches, sport managers, mechanics, even if you are not very successful. So yeah, I think that are main ones.
Okay, got it. Interesting. Oh, and coming back to road cycling, like obviously when we touched a little bit upon Lance Armstrong, but not talking him in general. So when we have road cycling, we have track cycling. Other than the obvious difference that road cycling is on the road, what are the other substantial differences between the two streams of cycling?
Oh my man, that's the bike, I would say. Everything. So yeah, you've mentioned the road cycling that's on the road, and track cycling have a separate venue for that. So I would say that for those people who don't know, the most obvious one is the bike, because it's very different. In track cycling, you have a fixed bike, which means that there are no brakes. There's just a very simple thing that you have one drive cog or like chain wheel that you use. There's one chain ring. So you can't like chain.
One, hold on. What do you mean by there are no brakes? That sounds scary.
Yeah, it's literally like that.
Yeah, there are no brakes. When I saw it, even I was shitting myself when I saw the bike.
That's scary. There are no brakes. And I've seen track cyclists. They go fast. Like they go really fast.
Yeah. That's the thing. I mean, you don't have brakes. So your brakes is your legs. That's as simple. You have one chain ring. You have the chain. It's very simple. Your your wheel goes towards, you go towards. If you want to cycle back, you cycle back with your legs. So it's very, very simple. And if you're on a track, you need to rise your speed gradually and you need to stop gradually. Because if you don't have brakes, if you just stop pedaling, that's it. You're done. You're off the bike because there is no free will. So if you're you can't free will. There's no kind of option of that. So it's always your legs. You need to control your bike. And of course, this provides safety on the track, which is strange to hear. But anyway, because you have minimum of details on the bike, there's less risk that you can injure yourself or somebody else if you have a crash. So yeah, I think that's the main difference. And I think the tires, they're really narrow. They're inflated as much as you can. The pressure inside the tire is very, very high. It can go up to 9 bars, if it does make sense. So it's really, really high pressure, but it is to ensure that the rolling resistance is low so that you can cycle fast on the track. So yeah, I think the main difference is actually the bike. And wait, by the way, I think I cannot mention that track cycling and road cycling, the salaries are very different. Road cycling is very popular. So you have all the teams, top salaries, everything Porsche, all the buses, and like the bikes are great. But in track cycling, it's very niche. And I think the salaries are not as high as in road cycling. And the system, how the sports works, is very different too. Yeah. So there are not many international teams. It's more like national squad, and that's it.
You know, while we're talking about differences between road cycling and track cycling, you touched upon salaries, you touched upon the bikes. Now I want to touch upon a little controversial topic. In road cycling, we know how doping has happened. Perhaps it's still happening. It's prevalent. Maybe it's not prevalent. But when it comes to track cycling, would you know, like, is doping prevalent in track cycling? Does it happen? Is it harder to dope as a track cyclist? Is there more testing? Like, just like a little insight from you about track cycling and and the doping out there.
I think like track cycling compared to road, especially, is a very calm sport in terms of doping. I didn't hear much cases. It's all on the national level, I think. There are not major scandals on the international level. I think like if there are some issues, they're being caught on national level. And I think the testings are done in the same frequency. So in my experience, for example, we had a big problem in Russia. I need to admit that. Before the scandal with the Russian doping scandal, which happened in 2016 and 2015, of course, we didn't have much testing in our sport. So like athletes on national level, they weren't tested properly, maybe because like officials weren't like really bothered in testing kids, I would say, or like national level, not very important. But after like the emergence of this doping scandal, I saw the changes in the doping procedures, for example, in Russia. I think it all came in place. It was very good because the authorities, they thought like, yeah, we need to get it better. And I was tested several times on national competitions and outside the competitions and before the competitions was very important. When I had to go to a very like high level competitions, we had pre-testings before the competitions. And if you got into the podium, you go test again. So I think the procedure is quite well established. So I think, yeah, we won't see many scandals in track cycling in terms of doping.
Yeah, so just coming back to what you said, Anna, this ties into another question that I had. Now, you mentioned that there's a stark difference in terms of the money, and obviously that probably has an impact on the lack of doping as well, since there's less greed, right, of athletes and so on and so forth. But still, to access a velodrome is way more expensive than just cycling on the road, right? So how is accessibility to a velodrome for young athletes in terms of cost and just in general, how many are there and so on and so forth, whatever you are aware of?
Yeah, so I think that the main problem with accessibility is that there is limited number of velodromes in all countries. Of course, it's very expensive to build one. For example, in Russia, we have only 4 major velodromes, which are situated in the 2 capitals, like Moscow and St. Petersburg, of course. There's one in Siberia And there's another one, which is an open velodrome made of concrete, very old one, not very good to cycle on. So it's very limited access. In the first hand, it's not about the price, I would say, it's about the place. So even in like big cities, you have to travel long distances to get involved into trainings, which can be quite challenging to kids because they have to have their own, I don't know, cars, or they have to spend like hours on the train or on the bus, which is, yeah, it's time consuming, it's challenging. That's why it's difficult sometimes. I think when you are a part of the professional team, like training in the velodrome doesn't cost you much, or even doesn't cost you anything, because it's paid by your team or maybe by the government, as it is in Russia. But if you just want to cycle on your own, it is expensive, I would say. And like, if you want to have your own bikes, if you don't want to compete on like elite level, or you can't compete on elite level, the prices for bikes can go up to thousands and thousands of pounds, depends on the level. But I would say the average price of a bike is a good bike, I would say, yeah, decent price is like 500,000 of pounds to start with, which is quite expensive, I would say. And like, yeah, I think those are the most common problems, because you have to have all the equipment, the bike, the kit, pedals, all the stuff, shoes, everything. And if it's not funded, they are in trouble because it's quite expensive. Yeah, but I think the main restriction for young athletes is the limited number of velodromes, and which restricts the number of participants there. Yeah, basically.
So now that you've said all of that, it's clear that cycling is also still, it's a cheap sport if it's obviously state sponsored, but yeah, otherwise it could prove to be, track cycling can prove to be a very expensive sport. Which brings me to the next, my last question, which is, which countries have the strongest track cycling contingents typically?
Well, it depends on the competition we're speaking about. So basically, track cycling is divided into two major fields. It's the sprint, short distances, like everything simple, and endurance races, which are long distances, either team race, like 4,000 meters race, or group races, like scratch, medicine, all those words, very complicated. But basically, I think countries divide into sprint countries and endurance countries. I think the European countries are generally quite good. The Netherlands and Germans are very good in sprint and endurance. I would say one of the top nations are also British cycling. Russians are very good in sprint. And I think I will also name France and maybe USA, but not always. What I like about track cycling is that every year it's a mystery who's going to win. And like, sports athletes are changing quite frequently. So you have new names coming in quite often. And one year, for example, in endurance race, Italy might be the champions. Other year, it will be Great Britain or the USA. So I like the dynamics of track cycling. That's the best thing. And of course, when you have group races, it's always a mystery. It's a lottery. It's you watch the race, and you never know what will be in the end, because anything can happen. A crash can happen, anything. So it's always changing. But I would say in general, it's the European nations which are the best in track cycling.
Well, Anna, I must say, like, honestly, today's episode has been so cool. It's been so eye-opening and insightful, because firstly, we've never done any episode on cycling. And I'm sure a lot of our viewers and listeners also, an episode like this would be very insightful. It's really informative to understand what's happening in Russia, not just what the current situation is, but the setup of how cyclists grow in the system, and understanding the difference between road cycling, track cycling, everything. It's been fantastic. And just to end up our podcast, we'll have a fun rapid fire round. I want you to be candid. Whatever comes to your head first, just go for it. Just a few questions and just some fun, quick answers from you, okay? So to start off with, who's your favorite sports person outside of cycling?
That's difficult.
No, you can name just one, yeah?
Yeah. I would say now it's Daniil Medvedev. he's like great tennis player, and I think he went through so many stages to like persuade everybody he's a very good player. I think he's very successful, and I'm very proud of him, how he brings the level of tennis in Russia to the next level. So yeah, Daniil Medvedev for me for this year.
What's your favorite sports brand?
Adidas.
Okay. What's your favorite competition? In any sport, like a competition to view, which one is your favorite one?
To view, right?
Yeah.
Well, I would name figure skating, right? It's a very big deal. I think I like it because it's beautiful. I like because you have the choreography, because you have the strength, all the elements. It's really beautiful. Yeah, a figure skating for me.
Just out of interest, have you done any figure skating in your life?
Oh, right. I hate it. I hate ice.
Because you said figure skating and you were literally giving me ideas. Maybe we can have Anna on for another podcast to discuss figure skating.
Well, I can skate. I'm amateur level, but I'm afraid of ice. I'm afraid of like falling down. It's very hard. It's very painful to fall on ice.
No, fair enough. Fair enough. Your one favorite country to travel to, like a country that's on your wish list that you want to travel to?
It's a tough one. I want to visit so many countries, but I think the first one to travel in is the USA. Maybe because for now I can't travel there, and I don't know when I have the opportunity, but maybe that's the biggest country I want to understand to travel in. Yeah.
Do you prefer mountains or beaches?
Mountains.
Who's your favorite singer?
I would name... Will it make sense if I name a Russian singer?
Any singer, it's fine.
Okay, I will name two singers. No Russian is Sia, and a Russian singer. He's a rap singer, Oxymoron. Yeah, he's a great one.
Your favorite movie?
Oh, gosh. My God. I will need to think of it. My favorite movie.
Jurassic Park.
For sure. Let's name... Nothing comes into my mind. There's so many. Harry Potter. Sorry.
That's interesting. Your best cycling moment ever.
Yeah. I think my personal one is a medal one. It was the Spartakiad, which is a bit above national level, which is a very important for juniors one. And I think we got the second place. Like, it was my first major medal, and it was fantastic because we beaten the like rivalry team by not like thousands of seconds. It was very significant, and we were not believing in that because it was very, very difficult for us. And I think that was the most memorable moment of my life.
That sounds really cool. If not cycling, which sport would you have liked to participate in?
I think that will be either volleyball, if we speak about team sports, or fencing. Yeah, I would love to try fencing.
That's really
or
cool.
maybe in terms of winter sports, biathlon. Yeah.
That's nice. And this is the last question. I need you to be very smart while answering this question, because Mazhar and I will be really upset. And especially since we're meeting you tomorrow, we'll be really upset about it. What's your favorite podcast?
I love that. So of course, because I am invited to your podcast, it's all about sports podcast. I can't like ignore that. Of course. Yeah, I'm really proud of being part of your job you're doing. Like, it's the greatest pleasure to be here. I'm grateful to be a part of something big. What's happening? Yeah, I can't name any other podcast.
Well, we don't want any other names. We're very happy that All About Sports is your favorite podcast. But honestly, Anna, it was so nice talking to you. Thank you so much for taking the time out and sharing everything that you've just done. To all our viewers and listeners, please like, share, comment, subscribe. We will also be linking Anna's journey below, so you guys can have a look at it. And stay tuned. We'll catch you guys again next week. Bye.
Bye. Thank you very much. Bye, guys.
Thank you.
Bye, Anna. It was really nice.
If you like this episode, make sure to leave a like and share it with anyone else who might be interested. You can also subscribe on any social media platform that you prefer, and all our links are in the bio. We also have a website with all our episodes, as well as blogs and a whole lot of other sports content, so make sure to check that out as well.